Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. This week has been marked by celebration and by tragedy. In today's program, we hear from the Bishop of Richmond, Virginia, in the aftermath of the mass killing of students at Virginia Tech. We also hear from the psychotherapist who helped people to cope after the shootings at both Columbine High School and Colorado Springs. We then cross the Atlantic and take a look at the life of a chaplain to the senior service, as the Royal Navy has often been called. First, however, Lydia O'Kane tells us about today's general audience.
Thousands of pilgrims and tourists packed a bright and sunny St. Peter's Square for the Pope's general audience. Following the Easter celebrations, the Holy Father returned to his reflections on the fathers of the early church, focusing this week on St. Clement of Alexandria.
As head of the catechetical school of Alexandria, Clement promoted a fruitful encounter between the Gospel and the Greek philosophical tradition. For Clement, faith in Christ grants the true knowledge which the ancient philosophers had sought through the use of reason.
Pope Benedict went on to talk about the gift of faith and said St. Clement served as a role model for Christians who search for a deeper understanding of God's revelation.
Faith itself, as a divine gift, inspires a search for a deeper understanding of God's revelation. As creatures made in God's image, we are called to become ever more like him, not only through the perfection of our intellect, but also through our growth in the virtues. Freed from our passions, we are drawn to contemplate in love the God who has revealed himself in Christ. By his life and teaching, Clement can serve as a model for all Christians who seek to give an account of their hope, and especially for catechists and theologians, as they strive to articulate the Christian faith in a disciplined dialogue with the great philosophical tradition.
Among those present at the audience were the National Association of Papa Boys. The association was founded in Italy under Pope John Paul II, but has now grown worldwide. They play an active role in World Youth Day celebrations. Also among the crowd in St. Peter's Square was Father Basil Rowan Fernando from the Diocese of Kunungala in Sri Lanka.
We have got a new Pope who has a real open-minded view and in the meantime was really respected to the doctrines of the Church. He is celebrating his second anniversary, so as a Sri Lankan priest, as a whole Catholic Church of Sri Lanka, I wish him all the best and good health, and may the good Lord bless him forever.
At the conclusion of the audience, the Holy Father imparted his apostolic blessing upon the crowd.
Upon all of you, I invoke the abundant blessings of this Easter season, and I pray that your visit to Rome will bring you closer to Christ, our risen Lord. May God bless you all.
I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Sit nomen Domini benedictum. Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
Bishop Francis Di Lorenzo of Richmond, Virginia, found himself with an unexpected tragedy in his diocese. Yet, whilst he supports those who grieve after so much tragic loss of young life, he also encourages the survivors to search for answers to their inevitable questions. Only a few days have passed since the Church celebrated the Passion, Death and Resurrection of Jesus. It is not difficult, then, to draw links between the students who died so suddenly and tragically in Virginia and the resurrection. They have died, but they live on, and we hope and pray that they are experiencing the fullness of life, joy and peace of the resurrection. Yet experience has shown that after a tragedy, life is not always easy for those who survive. Inevitably, they find themselves asking, "Why me? Why did I survive and yet my friends died? Is there a reason why I am still living? How do I come to terms with what has happened?" It can be a long and difficult journey before answers are found to those questions. Yet, as Bishop Francis Di Lorenzo, the Bishop of Richmond, Virginia, points out, there is an answer.
I believe the question is, why am I still alive? I'm sure there are some students who wonder, why is it that I'm still alive and these other 32 persons have died? What does that mean for me? And I would suggest to them that God has an ongoing plan for them here and now. That obviously they are expected, they are anticipated to take this gift of life that they have, be thankful that there is a plan in their lives, and that they should search that plan out and then follow through on what they believe to be God's plan for them in this life. Live this life out to the fullest with his help and with his guidance.
The deaths of so many young people need not have been in vain. By finding answers to their questions, the survivors of the tragedy will allow a new light of hope to be born. Their memories, although sad, will have a new level of meaning, not only to themselves, but also to the rest of the world. They can become a light to the world. Jan Switzer, a psychotherapist who helped mourners after the killings at both Columbine High School and Colorado Springs, says that sometimes the best way of helping is to share in the complete lack of understanding why a mass murder can happen. The world was horrified by this week's news from Virginia. Students gunned down by a young man who was so angry with the world that he killed innocent youngsters and then committed suicide. It was a tragedy that hit the headlines everywhere. Jan Switzer, a psychotherapist in Colorado, was affected in a particular way by the events. Her grandnephew had been sharing the same dorm as two of the murdered boys. She herself was one of those who had to help in the aftermath of the killings at Columbine High School 19 years ago this week. She was also around for Colorado's second mass murder only 1 year ago. Jan pointed out one way in which people cope is to draw closer to each other.
That's what people do. They just reach out to one another. it doesn't make any difference if it's next door or if it's across the states or if it's across the world. You know, we reach out because we need one another, and I think that's the ultimate, that we really do that.
Inevitably, the reaction to such news is one of incomprehension.
You know, when you hear something like this, you know, you just go, "This, how can this be?" You know, and even as a therapist, I keep thinking, I don't understand how, you know, how people are so triggered on that they go out and they kill and they kill. The rage within must be just horrendous. But as I emailed you and let you know, too, was the fact that we're on the eve of the 8th anniversary of Columbine right now. That was April 19th. And, of course, this always triggers Mosser's father, who Daniel Mosser was killed in the Columbine shooting 8 years ago, and he was on American TV last night, and what he had said, too, is that he just doesn't understand it, and it's going to continue if we don't change how we take care of the schools, the security and everything else. But it just triggers so much in people. People just don't understand this. They don't understand how this can happen. No, and the first thing they usually do, last night on TV, they had they showed a vigil, a prayer vigil that they had at the school for the very reason that, you know, they need some type of comfort. They need some kind of understanding.
And an event like this must just make it all the more difficult to cope.
It is hard to cope. It is hard to cope. I mean, I find myself becoming much more hyper-vigilant when something like this happens. Actually, this morning, I'm going in to work with the schools, with sixth graders, and I find myself already on guard, you know, as I prepare myself getting ready to go into the school. Because I think, you know, this usually triggers more incidents like this. And so we're going to be much more hyper-vigilant. And the kids may be asking me this morning, what's going on? What's going on? Why does this happen? Or they may not. I don't know. But all I can say is that I don't understand tragedies like this. And it's very painful for the world. It's not just painful for here in the community. It's not painful for the people in Virginia. It's the world. It affects everyone, just like the shooting that happened in Germany a few years ago. It's incomprehensible.
And yet, even though you don't understand it yourself, as a psychotherapist, you have to try and help other people to come to terms with it.
I do. Yes, I do. And I can only be honest with them. I can just say that I don't understand. But obviously, this person was a very, very troubled person. And wherever his walk was, he wasn't being heard, he wasn't being understood. And instead of being able to talk with somebody about it, the rage kept building inside, and just like a volcano, it kept rumbling and rumbling and rumbling until one day it blew. He blew his sack, so to speak. But when I talk with other people, I just let them talk, because oftentimes it'll never make sense to anyone. But I let them talk so that they can just be able to get their feelings out. And I really encourage them to feel their feelings from deep within. My nephew, Drew, is a student at Virginia Tech, and I haven't had an opportunity to talk with him yet, but I've talked with his mother. And the same thing, right now he's extremely angry by all of this. But he also is a person of deep faith. So I think that he'll go back to his faith, but then on some level he may start to question that faith. And so I always have to be open to them and hear what they have to say and not discount any of their feelings. That's really important.
And yet, there is hope.
It is real sorrow, and people do care. Well, you know, we have a lot of humanity and we have a lot of love. Despite all the horrific things that happen in the world, there's still a lot of love, and we have to be encouraged that people do care about one another and that God cares for us. And we have to rely on that faith and that love that God provides for understanding, even if there is no understanding.
Yeah.
Monsignor Paul Donovan is the Vicar General for the British Armed Forces and is also the principal Catholic chaplain to the Royal Navy. He tells us more about a life on the ocean wave. Waves and seagulls, they are the sounds of the seashore, familiar to millions of people across the ages, across the world and across cultures. There's the unique experience of standing, watching the waves roll over a beach, crash against a jetty, or lap against the side of a boat. Monsignor Paul Donovan is the principal Catholic chaplain to the Royal Navy, and so he has a special connection with the sea.
You can't go onto the immensity of the waters and not be moved by the sight either of the tumult of the waves or the gelatinous, the great expanse of sea, as you move, for example, through the Indian Ocean.
But how and why did he come to be a naval chaplain in the first place?
Well, it's a very varied ministry in the Navy, and one of the reasons why I joined the Navy in the first place was after a few years in the parish, the work became very familiar. And I felt a call to do something different while I was still young. And the idea of service chaplaincy began to grow in my mind because you're working with people you'd never otherwise encounter in parish life in very different circumstances, and often in circumstances where they've got no other pastoral resources on which they can call. So the idea of doing something which was meeting the needs of those on the margins of our society, doing something for those and being amongst those that, you know, the country expects to look after its borders and to be a force for good in the world, began to grow very much in my mind. And that's the reason why 22 years ago I was allowed by my bishop to go off and to become a naval chaplain.
So does that mean you had to do three lots of training? Training for the priesthood, then ordinary training as a sailor, and then chaplaincy training?
That's right, yes. The Navy and the other armed forces don't accept chaplains until they're already ordained and experienced. So they expect them to have cut their teeth and made their really big mistakes on civilians. So they get a trained product in. But of course you need to be able to learn those things which are necessary for survival in an armed force. And so just like everyone else, we train in sea safety, damage control, firefighting. And probably the most daunting thing we ever do is the training to escape from an upturned and submerged helicopter, because we'll often transfer between units by helicopter, so it's a necessary skill to have tucked in just in case you need it. And then, of course, you need to train up as a chaplain to know how to tailor your skills and your approach to people who, for the most part, aren't going to be church-going Catholics, because if you're chaplain on board the ship, you'll be the only chaplain on board the ship. My last role, for example, I was the chaplain of the aircraft carrier HMS Illustrious, with an air group embarked, about 1,000 people on board. 120 of them would have been Catholic, but I was chaplain to all 1,000. So you need to learn how to be appropriately a chaplain to everybody and not just to the Catholics.
So you'd need to know an awful lot about not only Christianity, but presumably the other religions and non-religions as well.
Yes, the majority, far and away the majority of those in the armed forces put themselves down on their records as being Christians. But we've got people of other world faiths on board. And yes, you're meant to be chaplain to them too. And certainly my experience has been that when I've been in units as the chaplain, they regard, you know, a Muslim or a Hindu or a Sikh would regard the chaplain as their own in the same way as they would a minister of their own faith. And so they do use the chaplain for pastoral care because they recognise that that's what the chaplain is skilled at.
And presumably, if you're on board a ship, even if it's got a large crew, you've got a very tight-knit community because the life of each sailor depends on the others. But it's also, if you're at sea for a long time, it could be a very lonely experience as well.
It certainly produces a sense of great bond amongst people. Every ship has got its own cap tally, and so there's that visible sense of identity to each other. But as you walk around the passageways and as you go in the compartments, people do recognise each other, they become familiar with each other, and there is a real sense that when a ship goes away for a standard deployment will be 6 months, when a ship goes away for 6 months, that we become father and mother and brother and sister and son and daughter to each other, that there's a real bond which grows up. And if, for example, you're in a foreign port and you know, a bit of trouble arises, people do look to protect their own because they've got that real sense of belonging to each other.
And also, presumably, if you're away for 6 months at a time, there's bound to be at least some people on board ship who are going to have babies born in their families or relatives die or be sick at home, and they're a long way from home.
Yes, and we are a microcosm of a community on board ship. And to some extent, being away from Britain means that everything becomes slightly more exaggerated. If, for example, a sailor gets an email from his wife to say that the children have been up at sea in the morning and the washing machine's just broken down, it all seems so much worse the more miles away you are. But we do get sailors whose children are born back in Britain, and generally the service makes great efforts to get fathers back for the birth of their children. But there are also the bereavements, and that's often when people will look to the chaplain to help them round the corner of that particular issue. So the service will often make great strides to get someone back for a funeral. If it's immediate family, it will send them back at public expense. If it's a looser relationship, then people can often use their own leave, but they need to make their way back at their own expense. And if they choose not to, then we'll often do something on board the ship to allow that person to grieve and to mourn that person at the same time as, for example, the funeral is taking place.
But as a chaplain, and especially as a priest, you're a non-combat member of the Navy, and yet your parishioners are all trained for combat. So that must put you in quite a unique position.
Yes, the understanding shared by all the armed forces is that the chaplain and the medical staff are there for all combatants, no matter what uniform they wear. And the chaplain and the medical staff aren't combatants themselves, but they minister to whoever needs them, regardless of whether they are friend or foe. And the sailors on board ship would feel uncomfortable if it were any different, I think. There is the sense that they grasp the role of what it is to be a minister of God, and that God is not partisan. And therefore, there is something intrinsic about being a minister in uniform that, to some extent, you rise above your nationality because you're representing not just your country, but you are, you know, God's representative to those people.
And most of your parishioners, being normal human beings, wouldn't be looking for combat situations. So in a way, the possibility of being in a combat situation is asking them to do something that is foreign to their actual personality and their nature. So that in itself would make demands.
Yes, there is that inherent tension, isn't it? No one looks for conflict. But sometimes find yourself in a position whereby to do what's right, conflict is going to be involved. We've often found ourselves in situations whereby harm is being done to a people who aren't able to look after themselves, and there's something intrinsic about our sense of what it is to be human beings and what it is to be Christian to fight for the oppressed. And uncomfortable as it might be, there are people in uniform recognise that that's what's expected of them and that's the right thing to do. I remember once, for example, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Runcie, once reflecting on his own war service. And during the Second World War, he was an officer and not a chaplain. And reflecting on the situation in Germany with the persecution of the Jews, he remarked that even if Germany had not invaded Poland, for which that provided the trigger for the alliances to then fight on behalf of Poland, even if Germany had not invaded Poland, there was still reason enough for the way that the Jewish people were being treated for the other countries of the world to go to their aid. And I think there's still that pervading sense that there will be situations in the world where people are being so oppressed by those above them that there might be a justification at some point for other countries going to their aid.
And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at vaticanradio.org and click on English. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.